Okay, Gladys and Potties, particularly those listening in China, put your money under the mattress, not into the stock market. Yesterday, as we all know from deafening headlines, Black Monday, it crashed 8% today, down 6%, and the Chinese government so far hasn't intervened to stop. No, I think that's out of date. I think there has been some last-minute news just coming in about, some more interest cuts. Anyway, Beijing crash. Is it the beginning of the global financial crisis, another, or will it stay in China? Our PM, Tony Abbott, I mentioned his name just in case you've forgotten it, told Australians today, don't worry. I think it's important that people don't hyperventilate about these type of things. The Prime Minister's view is that while China might be in a bit of trouble, everywhere else is improving. Now, back in 2009, our regular commentator on matters Chinese was Dr. John Liu, and he wrote a book called Will China Fail? So we thought, with China looking pretty much like it is failing, it was a good time to get John back and at least give him a belated koala stamp for his foresight. John joins me in the studio. Good to see you.
Very nice to be here.
Okay. What did you actually say? What were your predictions way back then?
Well, back in 2009, China was at its peak, not just in terms of its economy, but also in terms of the reputation of the Chinese Communist Party in managing the economy. Now, they do deserve some credit for producing the economic growth that has occurred in that country. But what they did wasn't really that miraculous. All they really did was flood the money with credit, encourage or in some cases force state-owned enterprises to invest in things that the country didn't necessarily need. And that's the thing about economic growth or GDP growth. GDP growth measures final economic activity. Now, you can move bricks from one end of the room to another over and over again. That counts as economic activity.
I do a lot of that. I've got a pile of bricks over there. You can see them over there, John. And after the program, I shall move them all the way over there.
Well, it's a shame you don't count under the Australian GDP statistics. But the point being that economic activity can be productive or unproductive. And much of the economic activity, building of empty cities, building of houses that no one needs, roads that don't lead anywhere, etc., these things count as economic activity and economic expansion, but it wasn't particularly helpful for the economy. And of course, you don't make any return on investment on that. And that's essentially what's been happening in China.
But at 2009, you made these points loud and clear. When did you expect Black Monday to occur?
Well, when you write a book entitled Will China Fail, you never put a date on it because you'll always be wrong. So I can't say I had a date in mind. Now, there's a sort of perverse resilience about the Chinese system, and that is that if you look at other systems, the Australian system, American system, even a lot of Asian systems, money comes flooding in the country and it goes flooding out the country. China has what we call a closed capital account. So money stays in the country. The government can force most of the money in the country to stay in the country. That means that you don't get capital flight. You can continue to invest in unproductive things. So it can continue for quite a while more.
I think you should explain to us why the Chinese stock market is very different from a Western stock market.
Well, if you think of what we understand as a stock market, it's a place of exchange where companies can issue shares for potential buyers out there to raise capital to invest in. The Chinese stock market doesn't work like that. It's a little bit like our stock market, but the critical difference is that if you look at the 2,500 companies listed on the two stock exchanges in China, all but about 100 of them are state-owned enterprises. So the point being that the stock market in China is primarily a way for state-owned enterprises to raise money from the public for the benefit of state-owned enterprises and ultimately for the benefit of the Chinese Communist Party. In other words, it's very much an extension of I wouldn't say an extension of the government, but it's an extension of the government's national capabilities.
It gives new meaning to insider trading in a way, doesn't it?
Well, This is part of the problem, that because most of the stocks are SOEs, people bought into state-owned enterprises.
Right.
I should not use that jargon. People bought into these stocks assuming the government would always ensure there's a floor on the prices. The government did that for a while, but the stock market has become so large now, we're talking about trillions of dollars, that the government now has lost the capacity to tame the animal spirits of investors in China. So now it's we're finally realizing that the Chinese Communist Party are mortal after all. They're not all-knowing or all-capable.
So you think they're now frozen in terror in Beijing?
Well, if you look at what they've done in the last 2 or 3 months, as the market has fallen, initially they banned or they put a trading halt on half the shares in the market. I mean, that's an extraordinary thing to do. They force margin lending providers to continue to lend to investors, even though investors were over-leveraged. So effectively, they force margin lenders from preventing the calling back of loans, which is what normally happens when the value of your client stocks drop. They've done a couple of other things. They've banned investors who own more than 10% in the company from selling stocks in that company. So these are all things that an authoritarian capitalist system can do, but ultimately they're very short-term tactical things. If people want to sell their stocks and if there's a fear generating, which there's very little you can do at the end of the day.
LNL on RN, on air, online and on your pod, and I'm talking to Dr. John Lee about the China crash. Now, you say that the reason the party allowed the stock market to flourish was to keep the elites happy. They can't be too happy this week.
No, that's the problem when you get the credit for economic growth and economic prosperity. When things turn south, you also get the blame. And if you look at Chinese blog sites and you look at financial blog sites, they're not saying, oh, well, we stuffed up there. They're blaming the government. They're saying, we expect the government to rescue us. And that's,
well, that sounds like the GFC and the response of Wall Street to their crisis.
It does, but imagine that every Chinese household with a trading account is now Wall Street asking for effectively a government bailout or at least government assistance. In a Wall Street situation, that wasn't edifying for America either, but it was contained to several large corporations. In China now, you've got 100 million investors with broking accounts demanding that the government take action.
That's almost like the Australians who invest in Lotto, and it's a dream, isn't it, for Chinese
people? Well, it's actually a very good analogy. The stock market in China actually has very little correlation with the real economy in the country, in a sense that if you look at the stock market or the stock indices in that country, from the middle of last year until the middle of this year, it went up about 150%. The Chinese economy was growing around this period at 6-7%, which is the slowest growth that China has had for about 20 years. Now, go and figure, why did the stock market go up? There's no rational reason. It just became almost a casino for investors to pour their money in. And because they expected the government to always allow stocks to rise and not fall, more and more people started trading accounts and poured more and more money in.
Now, what's going to happen internationally after the first shock and awe?
I'm not so pessimistic that it will have a huge effect for a number of reasons. The first reason is that China still has a relatively closed economic system. I know there's a lot of trading that goes on with China, but most of that trading is making stuff for consumers in other countries to consume. So what's happening in China won't affect that. If you look at the companies in China, China's seen as a very exciting growth market, but it's still not yet a major growth driver. The Chinese consumer and the Chinese market isn't yet the major driver for many of the countries in a region and many of the major firms in the world. They're hoping it will be, but the relative impenetrability of the Chinese market means that many companies will have their future hopes dashed, but they won't suffer a huge fallout.
I've already announced that I'm giving you a retrospective koala stamp. Perhaps in this case it should be a panda stamp. But I want to go back a little and get you to explain something I've never fully understood. I've observed that Chinese companies generally are very frugal. The people work damned hard for their money. And I'm absolutely flummoxed by the willingness of Chinese to not only gamble on the stock market, but simply to gamble. James Packer is just one of many people who absolutely depend on not only the Chinese whales, the high rollers, but, you know, the middle-ranking investors. What is it about the Chinese psyche that makes it such, that makes people so susceptible to the throw of the dice, the poker hand?
Well, in China, or in modern China, in ancient China, it's a little bit different. In modern China, I'm talking about China for perhaps the last 100 years since the Communist Party were around in a country. You didn't really have the normal economic opportunities available. So, for example, if you were trying to get rich, you could do it in one of a few ways, or really, you could do it in one way. You join the party, and you position yourself within the party and you became one of the pigs in a trough.
Unless you were purged or...
There's actually quite a few people being purged right now in the Chinese Communist Party. But to return to your question, I mean, my view is that there was never a orderly system of getting rich in China. Suddenly you have partial reforms. Suddenly you have the freedom to use whatever savings you have to pour money and into whatever investments you can get your hands on. And importantly, in a system in China now, you can keep the proceeds of your investments, which wasn't the case post-1949. So if you're a household, what do you do? This is the first chance you have to get rich, so you pour your money into anything.
And that includes casinos?
That includes casinos, but the mentality of the stock market is the same mentality. Well, the mentality of investing in a Chinese stock market the same as the mentality of investing in a casino is the point. You know, the stock market that went up 150% a year, even when the economy was slowing, that makes no rational sense. 3 years ago, you had about 20, 30 million people with broking accounts. Currently, you have about 110 million people. Why is that the case? Because suddenly there was this animal spirit that gripped the country that this is the way you make money. But of course, what goes up can go down, and that's what's occurred.
How will the economic downturn affect, well, such a significant development as the free trade treaty with China?
Well,
might China be a little less interested in freeing trade?
I don't think so. I mean, I broadly support... Well, let me qualify what I'm about to say. I broadly supported the free trade agreement with China, but, and I said quite publicly, lowering tariffs, which is what the free trade agreement does, is just one of many barriers of getting into the Chinese market in the first place. So what China's done with other countries... with whom they have signed free trade agreements, you lower tariffs. But when you try to, when other countries try to get into the Chinese market, it's not tariffs that's a problem. It's regulatory burdens. It's administrative or arbitrary administrative obstacles put in front of you. That was never going to change. That's actually how the Chinese system works. And in fact, if you talk to...
And that's why so many Western companies have got burnt and sometimes retreated.
Well, I'll give you one example. GE, the American industrial giant, they have invested 20 times more in China in the last 10 years than they've invested in Australia. They make more money in Australia than they make in China. That tells you something.
It sure does. Well, let's look at another emotional issue for the listener regarding China, and that's its involvement in Australian property investment in capital cities like this one in Melbourne. Will the downturn have an impact on that investment?
It will have an impact, but counterintuitively, I think it will have a positive impact. And the reason why, if you look at why Chinese investors are buying houses in Australia, they're buying houses as a way of capital flight. China has a very restricted capital account. It's hard to take money out, but there are loopholes. If you have a relative or if you have permanent residency in Australia, which many Chinese students do, you can buy a house. So Many Chinese families have used friends or family with permanent residency in Australia or citizenship in Australia to buy a house as a way of taking money out. Now, with these troubles in China, your incentive to take money out of the country grows exponentially. You are now even more worried about the sustainability of the Chinese economy. So what would you do? You would take as much money as you can out of the country.
John, we've only got moments left, but briefly talk to me about the so-called shadow banking system. That's the last time you and I talked. How is that going?
The shadow banking system now equates to about half of all lending in the country. Currently, the shadow banking system is about 55-60% of GDP. It's called a shadow banking system because it's not regulated by the authorities. The problem with the shadow banking system is that almost all of it is poured either into the property market, which everyone acknowledges is a bubble, or the stock market. So if that falls, the banks are affected because they've lent to the shadow system, and then households will be affected.
Okay, koala stamp and panda stamp to you. Dr. John Lee, Associate Professor at the Strategic and Defence Studies Centre at the ANU and a Senior Fellow, non-resident, at the Hudson Institute in Washington, D.C. John, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Most appreciated. And after a little bit of music, we shall welcome back to the Little Wireless Program my friend Gillian Mears.